views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to the Conscious Business Radio Network on Transformation Talk Radio. With all the advances in technology, it's really made it more doable for the technocracy movement to take hold. And what is the technocracy movement? Well, defined by Wikipedia, technocracy is an organizational structure or system of governments where decision makers are selected on the basis of technological knowledge, if I can pronounce that right. A technocrat has come to mean either a member of a powerful technical elite or someone who advocates for the supremacy of technical experts. Basically, it's scientists, engineers, and technologists pretty much leading the country or leading society. And, you know, as technology becomes more and more advanced, we will just naturally go to that. But the question is, what happens when technology is used to control methods and procedures? Well, in business, it's a good thing, right? It means more efficiency, higher quality, and higher profit. But what happens when you try to use this to manage people, whole organizations, and even society at large? So can this help us become more efficient and prosperous as a society? Or do human beings naturally shut down or reject these conditions? Well, we are going to be talking this episode about that, and we are having Patrick Wood, who is an expert on technocracy movement, to provide a deep insight into this timely issue. He's also the foremost expert on the Trilateral Commission, and he's going to talk about their current views on global management as well. He is the author of Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation, and he's also the co-author of Trilaterals Over Washington, Volumes 1 and 2, which was written in 1978-1990 with the late Anthony C. Sutton. And he's also the editor-in-chief of Technocracy News and Trends. But his publications on the Trilateral Commission was very well received during that time, and it was used in many colleges and universities in the political science department. So it was a really well done book and research on the Trilateral Commission. But he's concerned that technocracy movement is really taking hold of our culture now and our society. And is it good or bad? Well, let's dive into this a little bit before we bring him on. Many bureaucrats today are actively applying and tinkering with these ideas in mass. Let's use some examples here. For example, engineers use technology to plan energy and water needs for communities, enabling a ready supply, saving waste, and reducing overall costs. Well, that's pretty good, isn't it? But also the NSA actively monitors all electronic activities for purposes of national security. And social networking sites such as Facebook and Google have been actively filtering out advertising that does not match their business agenda or political ideals. So basically, they've been filtering out, well, from what I understand, they've been filtering out pretty conservative ideals. And they've also been filtering out other things that they just don't feel is appropriate, alternative news sites, things like that. So This is the question. Just because we have the technology to do something, should we be doing it? And are these positive activities or simply micromanagement of resources and people on an unprecedented scale? And is it going to continue in this way? Well, I am going to invite Patrick Wood to dive into this more.
Hi, Patrick. Welcome to the program. Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, absolutely. With you being an expert on the Trilateral Commission and many other things, I need to ask you, what is the Trilateral Commission and what do they mean by their self-proclaimed new international economic order?
Well, that's a $64 question for sure. Let me back up to 1973 when the Trilateral Commission was originally formed. This was never a conspiracy. I want to set that straight right away. The Trilateral Commission was an international organization with membership from North America and Japan and Europe. And their specific goal, which is written all over their literature of that day, was to create or foster a new international economic order. We collected all of their literature from those early days, literature of members, as well as the official publication of the Trilateral Commission. And this was their marketing tagline, if you will. And so they were obviously interested in economic issues, not so much political issues, although you can't get involved in economics without some political implications as well.
Sure.
But the Trilateral Commission was formed by David Rockefeller, the famous, internationalist and banker. He was the largest shareholder and controller of Chase Manhattan Bank and also of Standard Oil fame from John D. Rockefeller in the early 1900s.
Very powerful businessman.
Very powerful. Yeah, very wealthy, very powerful businessman. And the other co-founder was Zbigniew Brzezinski, an academic that was at Columbia University in 1970 when he wrote a book called Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. And Brzezinski was a professor of political science at Columbia. And that book caught David Rockefeller's eye, and they became very closely associated after that. And in 1972, Rockefeller took Brzezinski to Europe to attend the Bilderberg meeting in fall of 1972. And they floated the idea amongst their cronies of starting the Trilateral Commission to create this new international economic order that they had in mind. And they got a lot of support, a lot of encouragement. You know, they said basically, we'll be right behind you, that sort of thing. And so they came back, and in 1973, they started the Trilateral Commission. And they picked about 300 members, or I think it was actually 289 members initially, a third of them from each region. The United States had 97 members. They were Democrats and Republicans. There was no, party affiliation. It wasn't a progressive organization. It wasn't a right-wing anything. It was just a bunch of people that wanted to create this new international economic order. And there were bankers and industrialists and academics and politicians. And there were some media representatives and law firms and NGOs. It was just kind of a smattering.
Yeah. So pretty much a cross section of the country, different business areas and industries.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So what did they mean by a new international economic order? What was their goal? For more communication and easier to work together? Or what was the initial goals of all that?
Well, we puzzled over that a bit. You know, there was no other frame of reference on an economic order back in those days. We didn't understand technocracy from the 1930s, which we'll talk about in a minute. So we assumed that they were going to reform the existing economic system in the world, which was based on capitalism and free enterprise in some cases, as in America.
Sure.
And so we thought, well, they're probably, going to game the system somehow so that they can make extraordinary profits and the rest of the people, get the short end of the stick. And we did document that, by the way, quite extensively, that companies that were associated with the Trilateral Commission routinely fared better in international trade than anybody else. But one of their goals was to tear down all of the national boundaries to trade. They kind of coined the phrase or popularized the phrase free trade. Free trade was never free, by the way.
But so they wanted the idea of a free market, but just worldwide.
That's right. They wanted to have no boundaries between countries. They had a kind of an overall goal, I think, to to reduce the concept of nationalism to a nothingness, so that trade could just flow back and forth at their will, and where politicians in local countries would get involved and, you know, throw up trade barriers or taxes or tariffs and stuff like that to block international trade. They also coined or popularized the term interdependence. We hear this term a lot today, especially with the United Nations. There was never a call for interdependence, per se, in the world. But they made kind of an a priori statement that, well, the world truly is an independent interdependent place. And so we have to create an interdependent economic system. This was a I still believe to this day this is a fallacy, that this was a huge mistake in thinking.
So you think, because there is obviously interdependence in the sense of, you know, we have so many loans out to China and they have so many loans to us and we buy so much of their stuff. I mean, there really is an interdependence there that's clear. Is it something that you think they foresaw, or do you think they foresaw and there isn't going to be an interdependence, but we didn't necessarily need a separate order to track or a separate organization to track it?
I would suggest that they actually created this interdependent state that you referenced very, very clearly. Now, there is obviously an interdependence today, but the question is who created it? I would suggest they created it. And,
because simply doing trade with each other isn't truly an interdependence in the way that you see it. But once you start having huge debt to each other and all that stuff, now we're in an interdependent state, which you think they helped form.
That's correct. And unfortunately, right now, we're, you know, much of the world is just over the top, out of control, really. They can't control the beast that they've created.
Well, so much of the debt that all these other countries have comes because they get a central bank that's all connected to the World Bank. And, then, you know, I had somebody, the economic hitman. Have you read any of his books?
Absolutely.
He's very good. And so much of that is so that people are all, in his, the way he described it is that you get them owing loans. So then they're very dependent on, now they have to, whoever has the loan, you are essentially a slave to that.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's a biblical thought, as a matter of fact. That's what the Bible says.
Yeah, well, it's awful. I don't want to be a slave to my credit cards.
Yeah, who does?
Keep going.
So this is the interdependence that we see today. And, with all of the huge debt in the world today and the various kinds of, games that the banking system are playing with financial instruments and stuff, hardly anybody knows what's really going on anymore, but everybody pretty much agrees that the international banking system and financial system is completely fragile at this point. Yes. And that virtually any little shock could bring it down, you know, crashing down to the ground like a house of cards.
We need to take a short commercial break. We'll be back in a moment.
Get ready to rid yourself of all that is weighing you down and holding you back. Coming Clean, The Art of Transparency with Catherine Moss is a hit show that brings a real and dynamic message to uncovering and believing in the true amazing being you already are. Tune in and let Catherine help you become truthful, authentic, and mindful of living on purpose one day at a time. Live each Tuesday, 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
called the Oprah of radio by her listeners. Award-winning host Dr. Pat Desilly is blowing the doors off of traditional talk radio. Get ready for an energizing delivery and powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's fresh, new perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Visit thedrpatshow.com. That's thedrpatshow.com for listening times in your area.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. We did a show last week on abused children in our country and the massive impacts it's having on society and our workforce and the overfilled jails and the distressed communities and the troubled schools. And Katrina T has a song that she dedicated originally to Newtown victims, the children of that terrible situation. And she's also dedicating it to children across this country of abused in abuse situations. And you can hear that show on my website at sarahwestall.com. But I'm going to play this song again. And I want to remind you that 100% of the proceeds of her music will be going to CARA, which is a kids at risk network. And you can purchase her. You can go to my website at sarahwestall.com. And there's a link there so that you can purchase her music there. So here's her beautiful song called Brightest Star.
Where you are and how
beautiful music. Well, you can go to my website and you can purchase her D. Remember, 100% is being donated to children, abused children, and helping to fix our system. And we did a really in-depth show on that last week, and you can hear that show as well at sarahwestall.com. It's really a important issue that we need to be looking at. So now let's get back to our engaging conversation with Patrick Wood.
We live in a very dangerous time today. And again, I would suggest if we go back in history and look at, well, how did we get in this situation today? How did we arrive here? I would suggest that if you go back to at least 1973, you'll find fingerprints of members of the Trilateral Commission all over it. Now, there were others as well. It's not just that group. There's hangers-on, there's wannabes, there's other operatives that are in sync with their ideas.
Well, and
but
some
these
people,
are the people
think,
that throw it.
Well, some people think it also started when the Federal Reserve was created. I mean, you know, as far as the fact that we had to pay interest on what they were, it was a private company, and then we were paying interest in just the way it was established. It would eventually, the dollar would eventually grow to the point where it would inflate out of existence because of the system they put in place.
And they've done that. The central bank system around the world is the Federal Reserve times whatever.
Exactly.
Times 50. So
they took that system that was created. You're saying the Trilateral Commission was really behind taking that, the Federal Reserve type concept, and putting it everywhere.
Well, here's the difference, I think, between just the Federal Reserve system, for instance, or the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations,
sure,
and the Trilateral Commission. The Trilateral Commission was the first international organization that had a plan. They had a defined agenda. They wrote about it quite openly. And they had members in powerful places in all these three regions to accomplish their policy. Now, the Federal Reserve was never an international organization per se. Neither was the Council on Foreign Relations. Neither are a number of these other groups that people point to. But the Trilateral Commission was the first action-oriented international group that had an agenda, that had a plan, and they began to act it out in 1973. And we see this for the last 40 years, how they've acted it out. But this is the difference between monetary groups or discussion, policy, foreign policy discussion groups and stuff like that. And as such, then, the Trilateral Commission should be viewed differently than these other organizations. It is an action-oriented organization with people in the appropriate places in all three regions to enact their policies in those regions. Now, the problem with America, if it hasn't occurred to you already, is that when you have 300 members from around the world, an international group, when they meet together and come up to, they have their plenary sessions, as they call them, and they meet and they discuss policies and they determine policies that their respective members are going to go back and take and do in their own countries. Well, America has been subject to a majority of policy votes, if you will, from outside North America, from outside of the United States. So when people in Europe and Japan vote on policies that affect us, you see, the way our system traditionally set up, we have a Congress that's supposed to vet these things, right? Nobody asked Congress. Nobody asked the Senate. Nobody asked anybody. These people just came back and implemented these policies as if they were God's gift to mankind.
So now how do they run almost like they vote and they do all that, almost like they're a Congress, a world Congress? I mean, do they run themselves sort of like that?
You could make that comparison. I don't think it's quite that strong because it's not a governance organization. They said repeatedly that they didn't want to govern the world. They didn't want to change the political system. They wanted to change the economic system.
They want to look at it from a business perspective and figure out how to get things done. That will, in turn, change the political system. It's just they want to look at more about getting things done and not get hung up on the politics.
Exactly.
Well, that's more of a business perspective, for sure. How do you get stuff done? And let's not worry about, let's just focus on what we want to do, what we need to do. And so now let's look at it from a big picture standpoint, which I know that you constantly are doing, but I'm going to zoom out and say, okay, could there be any positive that they really thought they were doing to the world? And that some of the stuff, like anything else that you do, you try to set stuff up and it ends up being, there's a lot of adverse things. You just mess it up. You didn't really think through the whole things. And a lot of this stuff is experimental. They didn't understand the whole technology that we have going on. We've never had a world with this kind of technology, and they just aren't experts at everything. Or yeah. Do you think there's other things going on?
Well, I think there's other things that are going on here, and we don't have time for a whole history lesson, but there were many attempts before 1973 to make a power grab in the international community to create a new world order, if you will. This has been an idea that's been around for a very sure. long time. And by and large, it had failed repeatedly up until 1973. And there were academics that wrote about that, that complained about this. They said, guys, we did this, we did that. And, you know, the people got in the way every time or whatever, and we got slapped down. And so we haven't gotten anywhere with our new world order plans. The Trilateral Commission changed that. They were created to overcome those obstacles that happened before. Well, and so
it seems like in the world history, there's always people all the time that want to take power of it to as much as yes. they possibly can and take control of whatever. And they use whatever vehicle they can. And so history shows over and over and over again that there are people that do that. And actually, they've succeeded in many cases.
Yes.
So we can't be surprised that there's organizations trying to do that now, because it's not like we're in a bubble and we just don't apply to history.
That's right. That's right?
right.
That's exactly right. And it's just the big difference here is these people actually pulled off what they said they were going to do. They've done everything. They've kind of cruised underneath the radar, if you will. Very few people have ever picked up on this organization's influence. And they say, well, you know, just a discussion group. We're just a bunch of good people. You know, we pick all the best people for, you know, to be in our membership. So you'd expect they'd be in government too. Well, excuse me. It's a very thin argument looking back now over 40 years of history. You have, for instance, of the U.S. Trade Representative positions, there have been 12 USTRs, appointed by our president since 1973. Now, the USTR is the person that negotiates all these crazy trade agreements we have, like NAFTA and CAFTA and the TPP and the TTIP coming up soon.
Well, that would make sense if that was their agenda to deal with the
That's right. Of course it would. And here you have 9 out of 12 of the U.S. trade representatives ever appointed by our president have been members of the Trilateral Commission. 9 out of 12.
So now
that's incredible, including the current one, Michael Froman.
Now, do you think that their agenda is really world domination, or as much of it's just the culture of business and that just ends up happening?
Well, the culture of business, as it turns out, is very close today to what Brzezinski viewed as his technotronic era. The subtitle of his book, Between Two Ages, was America's Role in the Technotronic Era. And he believed that that at that time we were between two different ages of history, one future, one past. And the idea, you know, well, what is America's role in this coming technotronic era? So technotronic era was the one he was looking forward to. It would be one dominated by technology and, dominated by this whole controlled by economics, if you will. I don't know the better term for it. But, they viewed forward that America was going to be instrumental in creating this technotronic era. I would suggest now, looking backwards, that and understanding more about history than I did then, that when we look backwards into the 1930s, we find a movement called technocracy, which was a replacement economic system for capitalism and free enterprise.
We need to take another commercial break. We'll be back in a moment with Patrick Wood after these messages.
Hey,
everyone. Meet my friends at the maca team. The ancient Inca root vegetable maca is known worldwide for its huge array of health benefits. As a family-run company of true maca specialists, the maca team is here to bring you the best maca the Peruvian mountains has to offer. Yellow maca, used to promote endurance, vitality, fertility, hormone health, and much more, is on sale now. I love it. Visit themacateam.com to order yours now. Themacateam.com.
There are so many resources out there for meditation. But did you know that Atana's Heart Earth Healing Meditation is available for you for free? Yes, that's right. You can receive this free healing meditation today from Atana Badili. All you need to do is visit his website, atanamethod.com. That's A-T-A-A-N-A-method.com, and sign up. You will receive your free meditation instantly. That's atanamethod.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, this is Leslie Fontaine. When we become aware of a choice, it is not accidental. It is our opportunity to transform. It's about becoming our higher vibrational selves. We tend to get alarmed and hide our heads in the sand when something new shows up in our awareness. That's all right. But today, let's become aware of our desire, recognize the block, and make a choice to step through it. Often we want the circumstance to change before we change. See, it's the other way around. If you find resistance, maybe it's time for some support. If you're ready to shift into your best life, visit LeslieFontaine.com and let's talk about unfolding all that you want to be, do, and have. You'll find sessions, classes, and audio products to help remove the blocks and move you into your potential. And listen to my show, Sheer Alchemy, on Transformation Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern.
A word of caution. If you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and we're talking to Patrick Wood about technocracy and the Trilateral Commission. And we're going to resume that conversation now.
It was designed by prominent scientists and engineers of that day. It was in the Great Depression, of course. Everything was upside down. There was soup lines and people were out of work. People hated politicians. But the technocracy proposed to create an energy-based economy run by scientists and engineers outright. They proposed to dismiss Congress. They wanted FDR, Roosevelt, to declare himself dictator, so that he could just implement technocracy and give them control over everything. Of course, that didn't work out at that time. That's a good thing for us, by the way.
Well, I don't think that agenda would ever work out openly anyways. I mean, nobody would accept that.
They did not accept it back then. And unfortunately, as this is sneaking up on us today, people don't realize that this is the same stuff that's being presented to us today that came from the 1930s. The entire, for instance, the United Nations Program of Sustainable Development, which is an economic term, it's also a synonym as green economy, they call it. This is the same economic system that was defined in the 1930s. And by the way, that where technocracy was founded was Columbia University in New York City.
Well, do you think that with the world going towards technology, with, you know, I have a background in information architecture, and so it's very powerful as far as being able to have the data and be able to analyze it and be able to be able to use it to manage the world.
Right.
Now, that is something that is just a byproduct of the technology we have. There's a lot of good people who have absolutely no one, don't even thinking about this kind of stuff, that are doing it because they know that there's so much good you can do with, you know, the information. But do you think that it's a byproduct of the people, you know, because the world is going to move in this direction now anyways from a data standpoint, but people who are power hungry, which we will always have in history and we will have today, are seeing this as a development of our world and are using it to their advantage. And it's all mapping back to what you're talking about.
You're exactly right. I should stress, I am not anti-engineer or anti-scientist in any way. I also have a technical background and I love technology personally. But, you know, just like money itself is not evil. It's just a piece of paper. There's nothing evil about a dollar or $10. What's evil is when you develop a love and a lust for it, that's where you get in trouble. And the same thing is true with technology. Most people would agree that as long as technology serves them, it's a good thing. Like I have an iPhone, for instance, if it serves me, that's good. However, if I am forced to serve someone else because of that technocracy, that is patently wrong. I just resist that every time.
Well, and I think the good example is NSA tracking absolutely everything we're doing. Nobody likes that I've talked to.
And, that's right.
And it's an example of where the technology is being used in a way that we just don't like. And so we have to be careful when we start getting all this powerful technology and all this data and all this information on people. It can really be a powerful tool in a good or a bad way. And it's like anything else that's powerful. If you don't use it right, you don't manage it, and you don't pay attention, it could be used in some pretty negative ways.
And it is right now used. We watched, my family and I watched Citizen 4 last night, the movie about Edward Snowden and his revelation of what the NSA was doing and stuff. I think he's still in Russia today in hiding. But we watched that movie, and it's incredible to think that anybody within a government organization would go to such extremes to violate the Constitution, violate the very fabric of American liberty and freedom, to create this system of supra intelligence to spy literally on every American citizen. It's just incredible.
It's fundamentally not okay.
It's so big that you can't hardly get your head wrapped around it. What are these people doing?
And who are they to do that? Why are they in charge? Right?
Well, this is the technocrat mindset. A technocrat believes that the world should be run according to the scientific method. And if society is one big experiment, if you will, big social engineering project, then their goal is to apply their scientific method to run run society. And they see no problem with this. They see this as merely a monitoring system on a factory floor to tell you when a machine breaks down or something. That this is honestly the way they look at it. It's just a monitoring system to collect the data that they need, that they think they need, to manage all of society.
Well, and I think that's where we have to be careful, because collecting the data to manage society on certain levels and in certain fronts, like the food that you need, make sure people can eat, make sure that you have the resources you need. I mean, there's a lot of things you need to do, right? I mean, it just is, and we can use it to better society. But it's when you take things to the extreme and people lose their liberties and their freedom because of it, that's when we've gone a little far.
Well, it is. You know, there was a book written in 1932 that people refer to this in common everyday language today. It was written by Aldous Huxley, and the book was titled Brave New World. Now, everybody knows that phrase. Few people have actually read the book, but the book concludes, I mean, the takeaway from it is scientific dictatorship, how technology is used to micromanage every conceivable facet of life from the ovarian egg / whatever, you know, fertilization process that's done in a laboratory, to who you marry, to where you work because of your intellect, you know, your level of intellect and so on. And this book was written by Aldous Huxley. He was a Brit, but he was looking at technocracy when he wrote this book. And people don't understand. They have no reason to understand it, because technocracy just is not a big...
It's micromanagement on a mass scale.
It is.
It's micromanagement. It's like having a micromanager over you, which just kills everything. It kills innovation. It kills passion. It kills everything. And
yes,
it's just a basic concept. And, you know, you just don't micromanage it, people, if you want innovation and creativity and you want freedom. And if, so if you're going to set up this big micromanagement system across the world, you're just going to kill the, it's like killing the flower. It just wilts and dies.
You just said an important word, by the way, the word system. This is key to understanding technocracy. Technocracy is not a political type, you know, political kind of, it's a system of operation where policies are set in play that affect themselves through this system. And we see the system, for instance, coming from like within the United Nations Sustainable Development and all the things that the UN is doing around the world. We've seen the UN has been meeting. They met late last year twice, one for Global Warming Pact, one for the 2030 Agenda Pact. All the nations of the world have signed on to this now, virtually. There's a few holdouts, but by and large, all of them, including the United States and China and the big ones in Europe. And, you know, the world now is conspiring together, if you will, being pushed by dogma from the United Nations to do all kinds of things to reform the world, to create this system of technological control. And we see, you know, you see such crazy things coming out of the United Nations, such as, I think back in 2010, there was a big flap in the United Nations. They called for a global move for people to go to a diet that was meat and dairy free. They wanted to wipe out the agricultural and the cattle industry because it wasn't sustainable. Somebody decided that cattle was not sustainable, and therefore you just don't need cattle. Let's just get rid of the cattle. Everybody can just eat vegetables and bugs. And
yeah, it's, you know, that's an example of taking it to the extreme.
This is crazy. I mean, you know, I'll eat what I want to eat, and it's not up to you to come and tell me to eat my vegetables or eat my carrots or whatever, or to eat crickets, you know, covered with whatever.
You know, there are examples where you could, if something is really, really hurting the world, like having it around is just hurting others, then you can say, okay, this is not okay to have this available. But if it's not hurting, it doesn't make sense. There has to be rationality. No, any extreme is unhealthy.
It is. And the danger in technocracy is that the mindset has no compunction about controlling other people against their will. This is the big problem, controlling people against their will. And in America, especially in America, we value our freedom.
Well, it's micromanagers getting in charge. Micromanagers that just end up taking over.
That's right. And they're not politicians necessarily. You know, look at where do all the regulations from created by the EPA that stifle business in America. You know, where do these regulations come from? Well, it's not the president. It's not a senator or congressman is writing these regulations. They're written by people that are on salary. They've been appointed or hired, and they're deep in the bowels of the various agencies around the administration. These people are technocrats. These are the ones that think, well, hey, watch me, Mom. I can write any kind of regulation I want, and the people have to follow it.
I know, that's awful. And that destroys business. It destroys communities.
I know.
All that regulation. You don't put the whole thing 101 about managing communities or government. You don't put anything in place that doesn't need to be there. All it does is screw everything up.
That was the original idea.
Jeez.
You know, we're getting away from it. It's not just in North America. The original technocracy movement was limited to North America. But this time around, it's been promoted to a global economic system. And so we're not just dealing with North America anymore. We're dealing with the entire planet. Of course, the entire planet is not yours and my problem in one sense, but in another sense, it is, because we're we're members of the planetary
race.
We
have to deal with it.
We have to deal with it. We suffer the consequences of it.
Well, I think an example of it that is disturbing is Google has a lot of power because they have so much access to data and information. And I think limiting who can advertise to me is very disturbing. And so that bothers me that, because I know Google put out a policy earlier and a lot of people weren't, anybody that was, they deemed as alternative media was not allowed to advertise.
Right.
And that to me is disturbing because that affects our basic freedoms. And I think something like that can't happen. Now, I wouldn't want a pornographer to advertise on my site, for example. So I understand where Google's coming from. You know, if you, there's certain types of advertisers you fundamentally do not want popping up on your site when people come to your site, right?
That's right.
And I don't want that. I don't want call girl advertisement on my site.
Yeah.
And so there has to be, instead of them just doing a blanket, you can't advertise, they could easily say, what kind of advertisers do you accept?
Mm-hmm.
There's an easy way around that instead of taking away freedoms.
We need to take a quick break and we'll be back with Patrick Wood and this engaging discussion in a moment.
Song of the Heart, Walking the Path of Light, from author and healer Francine Vale, is available now. Through Francine's life story, we learn how imperative it is to love one another. Once this simple truth is learned, peace on earth will prevail. Song of the Heart is a life lived and a story told for this purpose. To learn more about Francine and her amazing gifts, or to order your copy of the book today, visit angelsandlightbeings.com.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
Shine On Radio, Find Your Shine with Kelly, is the show that celebrates what makes you, you. Join co-hosts Kelly Wadler and Dr. Pat Basile as they break down how to brilliantly fuel and move your body and love what makes you shine. Kelly is a professional arts and wellness coach dedicated to helping brilliant women find their confidence, energy, self-love, and shine. Tune in to Shine On Radio with Kelly and find your shine on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
If you're one of the millions of Americans suffering from anxiety, you probably know how powerless and out of control this emotion can make you feel. This is why it is so important to remember that anxiety is created by your mind, which means that you can learn to use your mind to uncreate it. Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. My award-winning book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, provides you with a step-by-step breakthrough process to understand and resolve the root causes of your anxiety and build a solid foundation of confidence and inner peace. If you're ready to take your power back, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com.
Order your copy of Dr. Friedman Schaub's The Fear and Anxiety Solution today. Visit thefearandanxietysolution.com for more information.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. We're talking to Patrick Wood, and we're going to resume that interview now.
I agree with you. What's interesting to note in Google's case, since you brought up Google, I wasn't going to bring it up necessarily, but you brought it up, and this is a good thing. Eric Schmidt, the head of Google right now, and Alphabet, which is their parent organization, is Eric Schmidt. And Eric is a very powerful person today because of Google. He's sitting on top of the world.
Oh, absolutely. Eric, he's sitting top of the data.
That's right. That's right. 3 years ago or 3.5, 4 years ago, Eric Schmidt was inducted as a member into the Trilateral Commission. So now,
interesting.
Now, I know. So now you have a person who is one of the most powerful people data-wise in the world with Google, and he's rubbing shoulders with all of these other, you know, technocrat types that are seemingly, so to speak, hell-bent for leather, the old Western term, to create this technotronic era.
And well, it's probably too dangerous for one. I should say it's probably, it is, and that's the way our Constitution and other things were created. It's too dangerous for one organization to have that much data in their hands. It needs to, really needs to spread out to multiple companies and multiple influences for it to be a positive, you know, force in our country. Anytime power is out of balance, it messes things up.
It does, and at least it needs to be transparent in the sense that don't hide things, guys. Don't hide things from us until, you know, you've got us all trapped in your net, whatever. Here's a good example. Just this week, Clear Channel Network or the Clear Channel Company, which operates a huge billboard system across America. They're also the big radio producer, of course, as well, but a channel owner. But Clear Channel has developed a technology that their billboards can interact with your cell phones as you pass by one of their billboards, and that they can target advertising directly to your cell phone.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, but now, you know, there's a couple of senators that are really they caught wind of this, and they're making a flap, and probably Clear Channel is going to get slapped and told to take those boxes off your. You know, off your billboards. But here they just did it. They didn't tell anybody. They just did it in secret in a dark room and said, hey, this is good. We can do this. So let's do it.
I think we're going through a period of history that we've never been through. And I think it's exhilarating because there's so much power at our hands. But we have to be very careful because of that power. It could get out of control. And I guess that's an example of it. And if you're doing something innocent as far as advertising, and I understand that it's the implication of what you could do with that data. You know, advertising isn't as big of a deal. It's very intrusive, and you feel like someone's it's bothersome. You know, that somebody can intrusive. It's like your privacy was intruded upon, but it's still innocent in the sense they're just advertising. But if you take that information and you do other things with it, that's where it's scary.
That's right. And you're not being compensated for the data that's being extracted from your life. You get no financial remuneration for it. You weren't even asked if they could take it from you. But, you know, when the government or big corporations, when they extract financial data on you from, you know, stuff that's out there in the cloud, when they extract social media information and build profiles and stuff on you, they're doing this without your permission. They're doing it without compensating you in any way. And, you know, this is fundamentally wrong, according to American theory anyway, that you have a right to control your own body, to control your own self, and control your own thoughts. And, you know, yet anybody that comes up with this mindset that, well, you don't have that right. You don't have a right to be a self, if you will, that they have the right to extract anything they can, no matter what. We see this is what the original revolution was fought over in America. It was basically illegal search and seizure. Americans got so fed up with the British coming in, stomping into houses and stuff and just taking stuff, whatever they wanted, and they could do nothing about it. They couldn't protest. They couldn't resist. And they finally said, enough is enough. Stop this or else.
Yeah. Who are you?
That's right.
Like, why do you get to go in there? Why can't I just go march into your house? I mean, what the heck?
That's right. But this is what's happening today. With data intrusion at every level. And this is part of technocracy. People would have to read the book, I think, my book, Technocracy Rising, to understand this, why I say this. But this is the heartbeat of technocracy, is to control everything from top to bottom.
Yeah, I call it micromanagers, a nightmarish scenario of micromanagement.
That's right. And, you know, I could just say kind of generally, if a person doesn't mind not being a person, then, hey, throw in your cards with them and go for it. You know, if that's what you want to, if you want to be, if you want to be a member of the Borg, you know, just go do it.
That's what it is. You're a member of the Borg. That's if they use that information, that data, in that negative way. I mean, there's so many positive things you can do with information that we could really evolve society and we could just thrive. And I mean, it's an exhilarating time. But at the same point, if you have people with wrong agendas or, you know, just agendas that are just so messed up, it can be a nightmare. And we have to fight against that so that we can keep freedom and people thriving and innovative and just a healthy mental environment.
Well, it is. And we're basically trying to maintain personhood. I think if you could kind of get beyond political thinking or economic thinking, we're trying to preserve personhood. Every person has a right to be themselves. You know, you do, I do, and you may do something radically different than I would do it, but I should respect your right to do it that way. It's your life.
It's basic freedoms.
That's right. It's just basic freedom. And hey, if you want to go off and eat this kind of food or do this kind of thing or travel or whatever, or run a kind of business or whatever, I mean, go for it. As long as it doesn't harm me and steal or, you know, steal from me or whatever, I'd say, man, you ought to do it. This is what America was built on in the first place. It made us a great country.
Well, the problem is that you can't know ahead of time what is better. And so if you restrict people from being able to go out there and experiment and do things, then you're restricting innovation and progress of humanity, because there's no way that a centralized force can understand what's best for everybody. It's just not possible. And so you're just going to restrict evolution.
That's right.
And that's what I have a problem with. And,
right.
You know, that's the whole point of the problem with micromanagement in any kind of situation. Now, when you have to run a stable, ongoing thing that can't go stray away from, like when you're running a big insurance production or something, then there has to be a very strict set of protocols. You know what I'm saying? Or a banking process where people are banking, you know, but that's at a small picture. You have to have things that you don't have a lot of fluctuation. But when you're talking about anything where you need innovation and, you know, where people need to be able to think on their own and creativity, once you start creating that type of structure, it kills it.
It does. It really does. And so we got lots of problems to look at in society today, not only our country, but globally as well. We've got a dysfunctional political system in our nation today, which is really sad. And we've got a dysfunctional economic system in the world that is also sad, because it's costing us jobs. It's costing people livelihoods. And, you know, it's just a very sad thing what's happening. But, basically, I would lay all these policies back at these people's feet and says, guys, whether you knew you were going to do it or not, whether you cared a whit or not, you're the cause of these problems that are hurting us today.
Well, the economic policies, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, that we are really having some issues.
Well, I have an economic background also, as you know, that I studied economics in college. I never practiced as an economist for a bank or a company or anything, but I do have that educational background. I've been a pop economist, if you will, for a long time. The reason, in my view, the reason that the world economically is in such a wreck, train wreck today, is that there's two economic systems that are vying for supremacy. One is technocracy, the other is capitalism and free enterprise. It's just that simple. And the United Nations has declared themselves that they are going to create this new economic system. They call it sustainable development. But the head of climate change last year, Christiana Figueres at the UN, she was in a press conference in Europe, and she said, this is a quote right from her own lips. I watched her lips move on the video. She said, quote, "This is the first time in the history of mankind that we're setting ourselves the task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least 150 years since the Industrial Revolution," close quote. Now, you don't need to read between the lines on this. This is a blatant statement. They have a plan. They have a timetable, and they're doing it intentionally. And what they're throwing out is our entire economic system of capitalism and free enterprise. for the sake of what? Well, the other flip side of it is their green economy. They want to have a resource-based economy rather than a supply and demand-based economy. And they're turning the whole system upside down.
Well, are they the same? Would you say they were behind all the central banks in different countries? And so that was their initial plan to get the central banks in all the different countries and then be able to change the system once they have a hold of all of that?
If there is a hierarchy, the central banks are a few notches above the United Nations. In other words, the United Nations are, in my view, just my opinion, are basically a bunch of useful idiots that have been fed a line that they're running with it, you know, and they've got huge influence around the world and stuff, huge organization, all kinds of different initiatives and stuff to do this. But I don't think that they are collectively the driving force in bringing us this new economic system. The driving force hails back to the Trilateral Commission. These are the people that cooked it up, that brought it back from the 1930s. These are the people that set the policies and strategies in place back in the early 1970s, and they've executed it faithfully for the last 40 years. We see their fingerprints all over this stuff.
And do you think they just mess it up and they tried to do something? Or do you think they, because I mean, I just see one big messed up mess. So do you think that they mess it up trying to do something good or trying to take power and control or whatever they were trying to do and just screwed it all up? Or do you think this is part of their plan? Because I don't know who anybody would plan to be this messed up.
Well, that's, you're right. And you're almost on the verge of completely understanding technocracy, because they have to plan on the destruction of capitalism and free enterprise. And that obviously is going to be chaotic. And it is chaotic today. As this system tries to die, it's very sick. It's flopping around on the floor, right, in the spasm. But you have to have the sickness and death in order for this new economic system to emerge, and that's what's happening here. Did these people envision a system of technocracy or neo-technocracy in the world? Absolutely, positively. People like Christiana Figueres are openly talking about it. They make no bones about it. We're going to throw this one out, put this one in. Did they ask us what we thought about that? No, they didn't. They just summarily did it. But the policies that the United Nations are passing around today came from the bowels of the Trilateral Commission and their members originally.
Yeah, my big thing is, did they do it? There's always people that have power issues and want to control everybody.
No, they did it. They did it for their own economic purposes. Not, I'll give you kind of the big picture. We don't have time to develop it in detail. The big picture is that the resources of the world, the things that we make things with, where wealth comes from, the resources of the world are being locked up in a global trust, if you will be run by trustees to ration out resources to people in the future that, you know, where it suits the controllers, the trustees, more than the people. This is the epitome of a managed economy, by the way. But what's going on behind everything, behind all the rhetoric, is a resource grab. It's happening all over the world, where resources are being gobbled up by governments, by NGOs, by environmental organizations and stuff, that is being gobbled up and put into, locked away, put into a system of control that the people have no access to.
And who controls that? You're saying the Trilateral Commission is all behind that.
Well, when you look at,
because
all
that's scary. I mean, I can see people wanting to do that, control the resources, because they see a resource, you know, and it being an investment in the future, but it being a decentralized activity.
Well, look, money.
If it's a centralized activity, that's where it's scary.
That's right. Money itself has never been a store, has never been an indicator of wealth. If you had $1 million in a bank account right now, or a billion, you say, wow, I'm wealthy. And in one sense, yeah, okay, you could do a lot of stuff short term. But your money is transitory. Anything could happen. The bank could go out of business. You know, the stock market could crash. You could lose your money in a heartbeat. So you're not really wealthy, not in the long term. If you want to be wealthy in the long term, history has shown us, it's always measured by the resources you own and control. if, you know, how much land do you have? How many cattle do you have? Do you have a gold mine? Do you have timber? What do you have? You know, what kind of land?
Real assets. When the dollar collapsed, what are you standing with?
That's exactly right. The real assets have always been related and tied to the earth. And that's what these people are after. They're rich. The Rockefeller types are rich, but they're not satisfied with money anymore, especially when the Federal Reserve now has destroyed our currency anyway. So what's left to plunder from our currency, right? So at this point, the only thing left really globally to make a grab for the global elite, those who want it all, they have to go for the resources of the world and lock them up for their own private pleasure. And I suggest this is exactly what's happening today with this system that's being put in place. You know, we're being told by global warming, oh my gosh, the seas are going to rise and we're all going to die. And, you know, what we have to do now is we have to set aside all these resources for the world. We have to start conserving. We have to start cutting back. We have to go to a zero carbon economy, where there's no oil, there's no coal, nothing, everything. You know, we're just going to basically go back to the 1850s as far as lifestyle is concerned. We have to do this to conserve for the future. Well, this is, in my opinion, this is absolute nonsense. This is just a fear-mongering tactic that is being used to twist the resources out of the hands of the people and put it in to the hands of these global managers.
Well, I do think it's kind of easy to manipulate the masses because nobody understands what's going on, right? I mean, it's not transparent, so we don't really know. And you have to really dive into what they're actually doing and read their actions because the propaganda sounds so good. I mean, it really does. And so you have to look and say, okay, the propaganda sounds really great, but what are they really doing? And it's not just them, it's everybody. That just should be a rule of thumb of how you run your life. Because propaganda is one thing, and then what people are doing is another. And that's where the scary thing is. If it's a central, I could see people trying to get resources right now because the dollar is so weak and things are so weak, you know, that it has to be reset at some point. You know, it's going to collapse at some point just because it's just the way it is. The system is, it keeps inflating and at some point you can't inflate it out of no existence. But the question is it a centralized or decentralized process? If it's a centralized process of collecting resources, then that's scary. Centralization of power is always scary. I mean, the whole point of our government was to decentralize power so that no one can get in control. And the problem when some one person gets into control is they can become a tyrant. And it's the tyrant behavior that we need to stay away from. And anytime you have too much centralization, that's when it occurs.
That's right. And unfortunately, this is the direction we're headed right now. Now, you know, people like you and I, we're talking on the air about this. We're revealing stuff that maybe people have never heard before. Folks, you need to open your eyes and get some education. Just go back and read some of these, you know, see what these people are saying and take them at their word. That's all we ever did when we started studying the Trilateral Commission many years ago. We never cooked up anything. We never invented anything. We went to the source. We got their publications. We went into university libraries. We dug up the articles and papers and stuff that they'd written, and we just analyzed those. That's all we did. And when we looked at those things, we said, "Oh my gosh, they can't say this." You know, and it's like our eyeballs were just popping out as we're reading what they said, and you know, that's how we got our eyes open to this stuff originally. But most Americans are too satisfied to sit on their couch and they're watching, you know, Dancing with the Stars or whatever, or their football game, and they're all happy and just, you know, content to be brain dead, sort of.
Well, and I think people will be content if their standard of living is pretty good. It's when you get messed up and your standard of living goes down and you can't barely survive that it's no longer something that you start digging into stuff. And I suppose that's why the rest of the world is digging into stuff, because they know that there's issues.
Exactly. Exactly. I say, and even your dog knows there's issues.
I know my dog is here. That's my dog, Cleo, everyone. She's such a pain in the butt sometimes, but I love her.
Good dog, Cleo, sounding the alarm.
Well, I do have to talk about this before we go and wrap this up. Congress spends 30 hours a week. 60 Minutes just had a show on this, and I didn't realize this. This made me angry that 30 hours a week is what they expect members of their parties, which if you work a normal 40-hour work week, which, you know, I don't know if they're working 50, 60 hours, but a normal 40-hour work week, that's 75% of their time doing fundraising and telemarketing. And, you know, they when they vote down party lines over 90% of the time, I mean, some of them vote, a lot of them vote 98% of the time, when they spend the majority of their time fundraising for the party and not going out there and doing their job, you know, figuring out the issues and actually leading our country. The question is, does Congress really lead, or do the party leaders or whoever leading these parties, are who is really leading our country?
I know. That's really sad, isn't it?
That's very disturbing when they're spending that. It's like an executive. If somebody's supposed to be running a company, you take the CEO and take and say, okay, 30 hours a week, you're going to just sit and make phone calls and try to raise money. That wouldn't fly for anybody.
No,
God.
It wouldn't. And
the time is too important.
It is. And it's unfortunate that as a body, Congress has been completely neutered over the last couple of decades. They're so ineffective today that the executive branch can do virtually anything it wants to do and just bypass Congress altogether. And they've been doing it for some time, blatantly so. It started with Bill Clinton. It carried right into the Bush years, and it carried right into the Obama administration as well. So when the president says, hey, I have a pen and a phone, he can go and he said, I can just go do anything I want to do. And if you Congress people won't do it, I'll just do it summarily by executive order, and we'll settle it in court. And he just does it. And so Congress has become virtually neutered today as far as its effectiveness.
And that's just not okay. And I really like the fact that 60 Minutes went in there. They did an undercover investigation. They snuck a camera in I think it was the Republican Party, but the Democratic Party is the same way.
Yeah.
And it was awesome that they did that.
It is. And wouldn't it be nice? This is just pure speculation, but wouldn't it be nice if somebody could, if we could somehow pass a law of the people that required any bill that comes to the floor to be voted on has to be authored with the sponsor's own pen. Wouldn't that be something? If they had to write their own legislation, can you imagine how that would turn Congress upside down? That, you know, get rid of the lobbyists, keep them out of the whole process. And if you got something to say, if the people have suggested they want a law and this, that, or the other, whatever, you sit down and you write the legislation yourself, Mr. Congressman or Mr. Senator.
I see that, so that they're more involved. But when they're spending 30 hours of their week.
They
vote down party lines. They spend most of their time fundraising. And then everybody else writes their legislation. I mean, what are they doing? That would be an awful job. Everybody hates Congress, but the Congress isn't even doing anything.
That's right. They're hating the wrong, and I suggest they're hating the wrong people.
Well, they are. Well, yes. I mean, when you look at, okay, somebody can say, well, yeah, the Congress really is doing, well, not when you look at what, I mean, you got to look at not propaganda again. What are they really doing? Okay, they're spending the majority of the time to being a telemarketer. They're voting down party lines, and they're not writing legislation. The other people are. So, right. Okay, well, they aren't doing anything.
You're right. That's, I know.
Oh, geez.
Oh, well, that's, well, I know.
Well, what can people realistically do to make a difference, you know, so that we can equal the playing field and move to a more prosperous model for all of us? I mean, so that we can all thrive and human beings can, you know, we can continue to evolve. I mean, we have such a great technology. I think it's exhilarating. I mean, I think there's so many positive things we can do with everything. What do we do to make sure this goes in a better direction and that we can take back our country and make it strong?
Well, I think personally at this point, we know we can't do much with Congress. We've tried and failed several times, several election cycles. We know we can't touch the executive branch and everything that they're doing with like the EPA and the Department of Energy. However, we can affect our local communities. And I encourage people at every level in out throughout America to get involved in their local system with their city councils, with their the county commissioners, with the school boards, the water boards. All these places are where technocrats come in and try and change policies. And almost every community in America is screwed up to some extent with this United Nations gobbledygook that we need to create this new, you know, sustainable economic system. This is nonsense. We can drive it out of our local communities. And if by some chance you actually do it, which you can, many have, you send a message up the food chain that when we're done here, we're coming next for you. And we need to clean our country out from the bottom up. We cannot clean it from the top down.
No.
It will not be done.
And so you basically, at the local levels, we make sure that we're doing things that are good for our children, that are good
for
our communities. It's really basic. Just don't let them have you do something that's not good for you. Know what people need in order to thrive and to prosper, and make sure you don't take that from people.
That's right. That's exactly right.
It's pretty basic.
It is, and it just takes a little bit of elbow grease, you know, and shoe leather. You got to get up, get out, go for it. Get off your couch and go out and go to these meetings. Find out what they're saying. Find out who's writing your general plan and stuff in your community. Is it being written by some consultant from overseas even? Or is it being written by people that you elected to represent you in your community? And stop this stuff at the grassroots level. It's trickled down. Unfortunately, it's trickled down.
It doesn't have to be. Top. We're more powerful. The people are
powerful. We are. People can make a big difference. But I'll tell you, people will never be able to overcome this enemy until they understand who the enemy really is. And that's why I wrote Technocracy Rising, the Trojan horse of global transformation. People need to see who the enemy really is before they can fight it effectively.
Yeah, they need to understand that what keeps you from prospering, and don't let them put that in place.
That's right.
Well, how can people see more of your work?
Well, I've created a website last year called technocracy.news, not .com, .news. And the purpose of it was to showcase articles from around the world that demonstrate what these people are actually saying themselves. And so people can go to technocracy.news and follow along with the narrative, if you will. They'll also find a link to my book, Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation. And, you know, generally just other good stuff. You know, there's some videos that I've done that are there as well. And they can contact us. People can contact us through the contact form if they got something they want to say. And basically go there. I also have a podcast, too. It's a periodic podcast called the Technocracy News Hour. And when I find somebody that I really, really, really want to interview, I do. And I put it up in podcast form for people to take advantage of.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Well, I'll have your information on the radio page so that people can go to it. And thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure. I hope it works out and that people get excited about the information.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You bet.
Well, I think this is an interesting and pretty serious topic that we need to be thinking about, especially as technology becomes even more part of our lives, if you can believe that. And, you know, it's probably more as we get organized with the data and be able to use it in ways to manage society. And that's what we're all working on. And it can do amazing things. I think our advancements can really do great things for society, but we have to be careful because it can also turn into a micromanagement nightmare. And I for one, don't like to be micromanaged to that degree. I don't know if you do. But I also want to tell you that if you want to see more of Patrick Wood, you can go to his technocracy.news website. He has a lot of articles and things there. He's also going to be at the Breakthrough Energy Movement Conference that's coming up in a couple weeks. And I'll have a link to all those things on my website at sarahwestall.com. And if you want to hear any of my past episodes or want to hear this one again, of course, they're all up on sarahwestall.com and on many other digital podcast players around the internet and around everywhere. So for now, I hope everyone has a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.